I suppose, to treating a systemic infection by putting a Band-Aid on a bleeding toe. That is to say, it does something to cure what appears to be a problem at the moment, but it has nothing to do with the broader concept and should never be confused with the broader concept. With respect to the substantive content of the bill that's now before you, I don't want to stand in the way of a useful reform, no matter how minor, which would bring any sort of order out of the chaos that presently exists. But I'm not really sure that this bill accomplishes that. Now, that's not necessarily anybody's fault, because the fact is that the adoption of this bill as a minority report on the floor means it's never received a hearing of any kind, as Justice Lindy has indicated. No one has ever sat down and talked to a committee about what it means, what it contains, what the procedures are which it contemplates. And the thing that strikes me about it, and this is a sort of an embellishment upon what Justice Lindy had to say, the thing that strikes me about it is that in subsection 2 of section 1, the language is so inclusive that we could be creating problems that are even more frightening than the ones we presently face. If you just read subsection 2, which is at lines 7 to 10, and I'd like to include all of that rather than limiting my comments as much as Justice Lindy did, except for a proceeding resulting in a land use decision as defined by the land use statute, for which review is provided, the decisions of a municipal corporation made in the transaction of municipal corporation business. Now, like Justice Lindy, I'm not sure what that means, but I assume that that's intended to sweep as broadly as possible, from the selection of paper clips to the hiring of a person who's going to work as a city attorney or hiring someone who's going to work as a city manager and everything in between, shall be reviewed only, and it's the word only that is the problem, only as provided in the writ of review statutes, and not otherwise. Now, as if only weren't enough, the not otherwise is thrown in there because lawyers like to say something twice when once would do. Now, if only really means only, then one has to consider what is meant by review in line 8 and by the phrase the decisions in line 8 and the word again review in line 9 in order to figure out just how limiting this bill is. For example, if a tort action is brought against a municipal government with the claim that the actions of a particular employee of the municipal government were contrary to law and gave rise to liability on the part of the municipal government, that process by which it is determined whether or not an individual is entitled to remuneration for the damages suffered as a result of the action of the employee is actually a form of judicial review of government action. It is certainly a review of a kind. In addition, Justice Lindy has offered a few other examples. Suppose a government official is acting entirely outside his legal authority. The normal remedy for that under our traditional multi-labeled process is to bring a writ of mandamus to stop him. But writ of mandamus doesn't work anymore if this language only means only. It's not possible to obtain an injunction against actions, let's say, of a city government wholly outside the city government's authority or in violation of some statute that may have been passed by the present legislature, because there's only one way to obtain review, and that's under the writ of review statutes, and so on. Declaratory judgment wouldn't be available, and so on. Or so I read the section. Now, I'm not trying to suggest to you that Mr. Cannon and Mr. Rubin are trying to steal a march, because that's not true. That's not true at all. I'm positive that that's not at all what they intend. But it's possible to steal a march by accident sometimes, even when one didn't intend it on purpose. And I submit to you respectfully that while I had hoped to appear here under other circumstances representing, as I said, an idea whose time has come, I don't get to do that this time around. And instead, I come to you saying that while I would like to see something done in the area that's now addressed by the two-page version of 2306, I have a sort of nervous disorder that is created by reading the language, which suggests to me that it may represent an idea that whose time should never come. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brenneman.
Judge, I'm under the impression that the provisions in the minority report adopted version were presented to the committee as amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I was present for most of the hearings, and I think, as a matter of fact, the material was presented, but its contents were never discussed. That is to say, the committee, by the time this material was presented, the committee was satisfied with what it was doing with the 61-page version, if you will, the 22-section material version, and was simply working and trying to repair it so that the materials were immediately recognized by one member of the committee as being something that he would want to use as a minority report and did not really receive substantive study. You're right, they were available, if memory serves, but they weren't discussed.
Any other questions?
I had one word, Mr. Chairman. I just don't want to, by silence, to agree with my colleague's choice of the tragic past tense or tragic voice of saying, well, it would have been if it had been, and so on. I'm not as pessimistic about this committee's capabilities. As far as I'm concerned, if the House can say we don't want to go with one bill and we can substitute another, I don't know why members of this committee wouldn't have equal ability and energy to do that if they so chose. You may not want to do that. That's, of course, your decision to make. But I, for one, am perfectly willing to tell you that if you need additional advice as to why this improved 2306 is an excellent bill and the way to go, there's nothing to prevent you from either getting that advice or acting on it if you want to. So I'm not about to sign up on saying, well, gee, we're here just begging for some kind of interim study. We've had two consecutive interims studying this, and we've had two sessions, House committees studying this and during the session. And, you know, it's not as if this was something that people haven't had a perfect opportunity. And I also am somewhat pessimistic that we could ever come back here in 2 years or any time with a unanimous front. That's always devoutly to be wished, but there are some people who don't like change, and they're not going to agree to any change, no matter what.
Any other questions? All right, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Mr. Cannon and Mr. Rodeman to come back up here. I'd like, what this committee is going to do with this bill, I don't know, but if the bill that we have before us is going to go out, I'd like to have a little better record on what was intended, and I'd like some of the questions that were asked by, and the judges may wish to stay and listen to, unless you have to be back. Okay. All right. All right. Now, you gentlemen have heard the issues that were raised here by the judges. That is, are we precluding writs of mandamus? Are we precluding injunctions? What does the phrase "shall be reviewed only as provided in the writ of review" section mean? Shed some light on that for us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the provisions of subsection
Cannon
2.
Speaking now, isn't it?
I'm sorry, yes. Bob Cannon, Marion County Legal Counsel, lines 7 through 10. This is a verbatim takeout of existing statutes, ORS 203.113. This is the statute which was adopted by the Oregon legislature almost by unanimity in 1981. What we simply did was to take out the word county and add the word municipal corporation. Now, what does it mean? It was designed in 1981, and it is intended here to provide for the review of a municipal corporation business acting in the transaction of municipal corporation business, a writ of review. So that's the review of when a board or a city council are sitting in the transaction of county business and when they act in a quasi-judicial or judicial transaction. That's what it's intended. That's what the present law provides for. The language that you have here is identical to present law, except for the changing of the word county to municipal corporation. There is no intent to change present law. As to whether a mandamus would lie, or declaratory judgment might lie, or an injunction, those remedies are not intended to be changed. Those procedures are not intended to be changed. The only difference is that if we're acting, for example, the county government in the transaction of county business, in other words, the Board of Commissioners is sitting and they make a decision which is judicial or quasi-judicial, those decisions would be reviewable by a writ of review and not otherwise. And that's what the present law is, and we're just simply changing the word county to municipal corporation. Now, I got the word municipal corporation from the municipal audit law, and we took that as a direct quote out of municipal audit law so that we would include all government agencies of local government, school districts, ports, cities, counties, and all the other municipal corporations that may exist, and even the municipal corporations that exist solely by agreement between two or three or multiple municipal corporations under Chapter 190. Our proposals were submitted to the House Judiciary Committee in February of 1987 as a substitution for the bill.
Chairman?
Yes.
Were they discussed in the committee?
I discussed them in my testimony to the committee.
Did.
I must indicate that I don't believe that I provided a copy of my testimony to Justice Gillette, and I don't believe that he was there that day.
And the fact, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The two judges, too, alluded to the fact that this only applies to land use decisions only, and I think there's some disagreement there. Is that right?
Yes, there is. The minority report deals with every decision of local government in the transaction of local government business. It does not deal specifically with land use. The other thing about this is that those decisions where there is a conflict as to what is or is not a land use decision, Senator, would be able to be transferred to the appropriate forum under the provisions of this bill. Now, subsections 3, 4, and 5 of this are almost verbatim takeouts of the original bill, so we took that language directly from the original bill as it relates to transferability. So the language of this bill are takeouts of existing law or the original bill dealing with the transfer of one forum to another. We think that from local government standpoint, that's very important. Let me give you an example. We had a case that just recently occurred in the Marion County Board of Commissioners, and the Board of Commissioners and I felt that it was not a land use decision. I had two or three attorneys who I brought together for lunch, and there were seven of us, and the vote was 4-3, and they're all considered, in my opinion, to be experts in land use, and we couldn't decide whether it was or was not a land use decision. Unfortunately, that case, due to the fact that the people were unable to afford an appeal, did not go up. There are just many cases like that, and so we would like to have that availability of transfer, because as local government, we don't want to knock somebody out of a legitimate claim. This is no intent of ours to knock somebody out of a legitimate claim simply because they chose the wrong forum, and we think that this bill provides that relief to those litigants who want to challenge a local government decision.
Mr. Rodman, do you want to say anything?
Not unless there are any questions of the committee.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have one comment. I, too, support the interim study. This bill has been around since 1983, the original 61-page version, and maybe the guts of the case are only 10 pages. The concepts that we're concerned with are we do not know what the original bill does. There is a dispute as to how it intermixes with present law. We, too, support an interim study. To that extent, I think it would be to the benefit of everyone.
All right. Judge Gillette?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Michael Gillette. I wonder if I could invite myself back into the process for something. I realize the custom is for the members of the committee to ask questions. Mr. Cannon's statement with respect to subsection 2 is reassuring, or it would be, except for the fact that that's not what the language says. The bill he refers to, the one that was enacted in 1981, was authored by Mr. Cannon, as I recall.
Yes.
And like most people who draw legislation, including all the members of this committee, he knows what he intended. But all of us have had the experience of authoring language, including me, of authoring language which gets construed differently afterward based upon what we said rather than what we meant. I understand Mr. Cannon to say that all that is intended to be included under subsection 2 are the decisions of the governing body of a municipal corporation made in the transaction of that corporation's business. Isn't that correct, Mr.
Cannon? That is correct.
And see, that's not what it says. It says the decisions of a municipal corporation. Well, the decision of the municipal corporation includes the decision of any of its officers, among other things. And if really all that's intended is to provide the writ of review as the sole method for reviewing actions of a city council or board of county commissioners, that's at least limited. But what worries me is that the language permits the interpretation, in fact, I think compels the interpretation, of the action of any of the officers of a municipal corporation who are authorized to act for the corporation are also to be reviewed only by the writ of review. And I know very well that that's not what's intended. I would prefer that be clarified, if that's okay with everybody, because obviously none of us want to create the sort of ludicrous situation in which those other remedies are not available when they're really useful.
It's nice to have a Supreme Court judge around.
I think it's helpful. Now, what I would suppose could be the case, I don't have any question about how this might be construed in the Supreme Court, based upon the record that we have now established here, but we are all concerned about the people who aren't at this committee hearing and who aren't sitting in an appellate court, those people, I guess Judge Gillette had in mind, who are going to be reading this language and thinking that it may mean something other than what is obviously intended here. So my suggestion is, it doesn't seem to me like this is going to require much of an amendment. I would suggest, if you've got a few minutes, the three of you or four of you, whoever many are, get together, see if you can come up with two or three words to recommend to us, because I think the committee may want to consider the bill, but I think we want to send out something that encompasses your stated intent. Now, if you can help us with that, fine. I'm going to put this, this is only a work session, but a public hearing, I won't bring it into a work session until a few minutes go by, at least, or some time goes by, if at all. So if you think you can put something together for us, we'll come back to this today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
There's some conference area in our offices just down the hall.
Thank you.
With reference to the House Bill 3197, 3197 is not on the agenda. I'll have counsel explain. We passed that out the other day, and I'll have counsel explain now the problem that has arisen, and I suppose if we wanted to act on it further today, we could submit it. But I would like to have counsel explain the problem and then have us take this bill back, consider an amendment or a suggestion he's got, and maybe send it out again. Counsel?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you could turn to the House amendments to House Bill 3197, that incorporates...
Do we have that bill folder here?
We should.
Yes, it's on the bottom. It's on the bottom. Yeah, go ahead.
You may recall that when we passed the bill out, we added an amendment that would allow a limited class of persons, for instance, step-parents, grandparents, where paternity hasn't been established, to petition the court for visitation only under certain limited circumstances. Since we did that, we then create an inconsistency with subsection 1 in section 1, that is lines 4 through 10 on page 1. First of all, that section is only a policy statement. It doesn't have any substance or action in it. It's just a policy statement. Second of all, by using the word relatives on line 7 and the word physical custodian on line 8, it makes the bill internally inconsistent, both with the amendment I just spoke about and another amendment that the committee passed on, which also includes members residing in the household. So one proposal, which is incorporated into LC form, is to just delete that policy statement, section 1. It does not materially affect the bill in any way. Second, if members of the committee could turn to page 2, lines 5 to 6, for some reason we didn't catch that section anywhere along the line. It doesn't make much sense in its current form. Originally, it was important because it had the two-year requirement. That is, to become a psychological parent, you had to meet the requirements for two or more years, or at least that would establish a prima facie case. By amending the bill through lines 11 through 18, we've totally restructured what the definition of psychological parent is. There's no longer any time limit except for foster parents, which is now 3 years. Since we've taken out the time limit, there's no longer any need for lines 5 through 7, and as it's stated, doesn't make too much sense. So the LC amendment that I've had drawn up, which is not in front of you because I just got it, dash 11, what it does is to delete that sub 1, which is lines 4 through 10 on page 1, and lines 5 through 7 on page 2. Neither of those changes makes any difference in the bill as passed out by the committee, but does make it internally consistent.
Any questions of counsel? I think the chair would move to recall House Bill 3197. to consider the issues of that have been pointed out by council. Anybody have any objection to that? That's so ordered. Now we are back with House Bill 3197. For purposes of discussion, the chair would move the deletion of the material mentioned by council. That's lines 4 through 10 on page 1 and 5 through 7 on page 2. Questions or discussion on that motion?
That's of the House amendment.
Okay. Take a minute to give everybody a chance to take another look at that. Any questions, Council, at all on this, or? Any objection to that amendment? All right, that's so ordered, and then the chair would move House Bill 3197 is amended. The floor do pass. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Brockman.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That carries. And
conflict amendment on the. Now,
but
we've already sent it out.
Oh. Get that back to the floor. Oh, we, okay, well. That's the, we took House Bill 3159 off the floor this morning and it got added to the.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, that's the one that. I think Senator Trogue carried and took the motion. I was on the rostrum. I don't think he understood what we were doing. But Council, let's turn to a work session on House Bill 3059, and Council can explain where we are on that. It was moved off the floor and back to committee today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is the bill that changes some of the driving while suspended misdemeanors to driving while suspended infractions. And the House and Senate have taken action on another bill which transforms the current occupational license description into a hardship permit. And so we have a conflict because we continue to use the word occupational in this bill, whereas the bill that's already passed both houses uses the word hardship. Legislative Council has drafted an amendment which replaces our occupational with the word hardship where it is cited in the bill. That's the only change the LC amendment makes, and with that the conflict will be resolved.
Okay, so that's LC-3 then, isn't it?
That's right.
2434, that's dated June 16th. Everybody has that before you? All right, Senator Hill would move the -3 amendment to A. Engrossed House Bill 3059. Any objection to that? So ordered. And Senator Hill would move House Bill 3059 as amended to the floor do pass. Any discussion? Call a roll on that, please.
Brenneman.
Aye.
Brockman.
Aye.
Cohen.
Hill. Aye.
Wires. Aye.
Aye. That carries. We'll look at go to a public hearing on House Bill 2844. And the staff measure analysis is in the folder. We have one witness. Vern Plotz is here. There you are. The staff measure analysis is brief and right to the point, so go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Vern Fotz, chairman of the Oregon Board of Parole. I'm here today to speak about 2844 and answer your questions if you have any. This bill was initiated by the board. It would result in statutory changes that would help us more efficiently manage our growing workload. Current statutes require that the board see new offenders who enter the institutions and to set their prison terms within 6 months of their admission to the state correctional facilities. House Bill 2844 proposes to change that requirement to allow a period of 1 year for persons sentenced to 15 years or more. Current workload is such that we will exceed the 6-month requirement for all offenders within the first year of this coming biennium. And the change will give us time to implement new and, I hope, more efficient procedures and to review both statutes and rules to determine if we can handle some of our hearings in different ways. In spite of this, and I want to be honest about this and advise that even with these changes, we may not be able to stay within the statutory time limit. In 85, the board held 6,738 hearings, 3,419 of which were prison term hearings. And in 1986, we held 7,316 hearings, of which 3,995 were prison term hearings. Preliminary figures for 1987 show a decrease in hearings, but a steady growth in admissions to institutions. And the decrease in hearings reflects the protracted absence of a chairperson and a breakdown in our capacity to adequately manage the growing demand. We're implementing new procedures now. Given the latitude provided by this proposed change in statute, we hope to manage the workload, be able to manage the workload within the required time frame.
All right, any questions? Senator Hill.
Chair. Yes, Vern, if you, this does not preclude you from providing such a hearing at an earlier date than 1 year, I assume.
No, it does not. Okay. No, we would do, I think, the best that we could to stay within that 6-month time frame, but I just think it's slipping away from us.
Any other questions? Senator Hill, are you satisfied with this bill?
Yes.
Would you like to move it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Well, I know we're just in public hearing at that. Of course, we did that the other day, as I recall.
Right. If there aren't any other witnesses on this bill, and I'll go into work session on it, and I'll accept your motion to to move House Bill 2844 to the floor. Do pass. Any discussion? Any questions? Call the roll, please.
Raymond?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Owen?
Andy?
Hill?
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Curious. All right, we'll have a public hearing on House Bill 2180. And Bill Linden is here on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Witness.
For the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. House Bill 2180 relates to the state's ability to recover forfeited security from criminal defendants, and what it does is establish some new options to use for this enforcement. The way the security release system works in a nutshell is this. The court will set a security amount on a defendant, and the defendant then executes a release agreement and deposits 10% of the total security amount. The defendant is then released from custody on the condition that they agree to appear as the court directs. If the defendant doesn't comply with the release conditions, the court enters an order declaring the security forfeited and sends a notice to the defendant to this effect. The defendant then has 30 days from the date of forfeiture to appear or satisfy the court that the appearance was impossible and not the defendant's fault. What happens next is where the problem is we're trying to address with this bill. ORS 135280 sub 4 requires the district attorneys, when a forfeiture judgment is entered, to have execution issued on the judgment delivered to the sheriff. It's a mandatory responsibility, but like many other things, it's a question of workload and resources, and with the exception of one county we're aware of, the district attorneys are not in a position to go out and take the activities needed to execute on these forfeited judgments. In the bill, section Section 1, Sub 4, which is on page 1, line 28, makes issuance of execution by the district attorneys permissive instead of mandatory. So it leaves that option in there if the district attorneys are in a position to enforce the judgments. The new language in the bill, which is on lines 26 and 27, provides that if the judgment is entered in the circuit court, it's docketed, it will be docketed, and if entered in the district court, it may be docketed as a civil judgment. The reason for this distinction is the lien ability of the different judgments. On page 2, lines 13 to 18, there's statutory authorization for the security deposited with the courts to be transferred from trust to revenue by virtue of the entry of the judgment of forfeiture. And our goal here is to have another mechanism available for us to collect security amounts. If the district attorneys aren't in a position to issue the execution, we want to convert these funds to civil judgments and proceed as we normally do in collecting civil judgments, which typically involves first trying to work with the debtor to pay the money. If that doesn't appear to be fruitful, we turn these over to the Department of Revenue for their enforcement action. There is one amendment we're offering to the bill in response.